This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
Well, here we are for the other 19 hours of the week. I control all that you hear, but this hour belongs to you. For the next hour, I will do my best to tackle your questions on any subject. Whatever you have questions about, now is the time to call at 800-848-9222 as we embark on another edition of...
The Other Side of Midnight proudly presents Ask Frank.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Oh, that's right. I am prepared to do my best to answer your questions. If you need advice about something, please call. You want to know something about the inside of the radio business? Please call. If you want to know my opinion about something that's in the news or maybe something we've covered, something we haven't covered enough, please call. If you want to know, if you want to throw a hypothetical scenario my way and ask my opinion about that, dial 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Any subject is fair game. I will do my best to answer it. 800-848-9222. All right, let me kick things off with John. What's your question, John?
I want to know, I mean, I've been listening to WABC for the past couple of hours. Unfortunately, I couldn't get through to Dominic Carter, but...
what's your question, John? Okay, what's your question?
All right, the question is, why are so many of your listeners against the people who are protesting on Columbia University's campus?
All right, well, obviously... Okay, John, I'll do my best to answer your question. Obviously, I can't speak for anyone except me, right? I can't tell you anyone's opinion except mine. However, given what I've heard from a lot of people that have called into a lot of the various shows and my interactions with friends, coworkers, neighbors, I think if they view these protests as hateful and they view some of these demonstrations as anti-Semitic in nature rather than being focused on just policy. I think they view these protests as disruptive and not necessarily conducive to education. So, I think what you're doing is the right thing, is asking why people feel a certain way. Because I think one of the mistakes that we all make is we believe strongly about something, whatever the something is. It could be something silly or it could be something super serious, as the Israeli-Palestinian conflict certainly is. And we can't understand why someone else feels differently. I think the most important thing that all of us can do on any subject, but especially a subject as polarizing as the Middle East, is put ourselves in the other guy's shoes and think, what would I think if I were in their position? And it really does cause you to look at issues differently. But so I think you're asking the right question, and I think that's my answer as to why most of the listeners that you're referring to feel the way that they do. All right, 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Peter is in the Boogie Down Bronx. Hi, Peter.
Hey, how you doing, Frank? Can I ask you a favor?
Anything.
You might make ABC history, for example. The fact is, why not invite one of the opposition on so that we can hear both of you talk?
Peter, that's a great idea, actually. I was going to try and get down there today, but my son is not in school today, so I'm not able to get down there. But yes, I am actually going to do that next week. I've reached out to the people that have organized these protests in Columbia to see if one of them wants to come on, especially one of them is Jewish. I'd really like to get him on since so many people have accused the protesters of being anti-Semitic. But I think it's a great idea. Yes, I am working on
one
that.
Other thing.
Just quickly, if you can, Peter. Thing. Yeah, quickly.
Frank, one other thing. tell Dominic the guy.
Okay, thank you. I'm not delivering messages from you to anybody. Thank you. If you have a question, let me know what it is. 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. Two open lines if you want to jump on board with a question. And by the way, we will give you a prize for whomever comes up with the best question in the eyes of Matt Blaze, Tony, and Elias. Pete in Piscataway, what's your question?
Hi, Frank. Hi, Frank. How far can you travel by car in one day before you say, that's it? I can't go any further.
How far can I travel one day by car? You know, I did a ride to the Outer Banks one time. That was a pretty lengthy drive. I think that was about 8 or 9 hours. So I'm going to say that's probably my max. I was really fading towards the end of that trip.
Oh, that's pretty good. All right, Frank, have a good night.
Thank you, Pete. Appreciate that. Good question. All right. Three open lines if you have a question. And this is a rarity. We very rarely have any open lines that ask Frank anything. So if you have a question and you have not been able to get through previously, this is your day. 800-848-9222. Julie is in New Jersey. Hi, Julie.
Hi. I have a question regarding Obama's birth certificate. Oh, everybody always questioned about where he was born.
Well, not everybody.
Have shown up on any passports since he traveled outside of the country a few times?
Yeah, I mean, he showed his birth certificate, you know, when
but
people...
did anybody, because that was, it took a long time for him to show it. I'm just curious, because nobody ever mentioned tracing his passport.
Yeah, I mean, they don't generally make the supporting documentation that you submit for your passport. They don't usually generally make it available to the public, but yes, he would have, from submitting your own passport documentation, that is considered one of the things that you have to submit usually.
Right. But the whole thing was that it took so long for him to produce.
I mean, Julie, it was ridiculous. I mean, it was a silly thing. I mean, I think it was a silly thing.
Yeah, I don't
of course
know.
It was. I mean, that's why, I mean, it's an absolutely ridiculous thing. If he wasn't born in the country, he wouldn't have been on the ballot for president. And that's one of the reasons it was so absurd, because you can't do things like get a passport if you don't have a birth certificate. I mean, it was just an absurd premise that I think was just pushed by people. It actually began really with the Hillary Clinton campaign when they were running against him. I'm not saying that she began this, but operatives tied to her were the first people to raise this. But it's ridiculous. I mean, it's a ridiculous thing. I can't believe we're still talking about it this many years later. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. Gary, hello.
Good morning, Frank.
Morning.
My question is, with the online merchandise, your particular name or personality's name is affixed to the profit. Do you benefit in any way on that?
Not at all. Not a dime. By the way, if people don't know what Gary's talking about, we have an online store where you can buy some of our merchandise at store.othersideofmidnightshow.com. That's store.othersideofmidnightshow.com. Not directly, I should say, Gary, but my whole...
Are you obligated?
Well, am I obligated to do what?
To be involved with that merchandise.
Well, I'm not obligated, but I'd like to. What I view it as, Gary, if I'm being totally candid, is three things. One, I would love to go all around town and see people wearing Other Side of Midnight shirts, Other Side of Midnight hats, Other Side of Midnight gear. I think it's a great way to promote the show and what I'm doing, especially with the Racket Report podcast. I think it's great advertising for the show, and I'd love to enlist all of our many listeners, because I see the ratings. We have a lot of listeners, but I'm not seeing that manifested in terms of t-shirts out in the world. So I'd love to enlist everyone that's listening as an ambassador. The other thing, honestly, when they decide whether or not to keep me or not, whether they decide to re-up my contract or not, whether they decide to give me a raise or not, if I can show that, hey, look at all these people that are buying Frank Morano merchandise in the online store, obviously that helps. Whereas if no one's buying it and they're showing no interest in any of the products we have, that doesn't help. And then selfishly, you know, I have recommended several new designs for merchandise. So they've told me that they'll put these designs into fruition if some more people start patronizing the Other Side of Midnight online store. Thank you, Gary. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222, one open line if you have a question. Paulie, what's your question?
Hey, Frank, did you ever think about being televised as you're doing the radio station?
You know, I've certainly thought about it, but I much prefer radio. I like theater of the mind. I like painting pictures with words.
Are you doing a show right now? Are you doing a show right now being on TV?
Yeah, no, I understand. I think radio is at its best when it's theater of the mind and when you're using your imagination, and when I'm using theater, you know, sounds and words to paint a certain picture for you. I feel like some of the illusion, some of the magic kind of gets taken away if it's televised. I'm not against it. I just find that people pay attention to the wrong things. And I've done a lot of TV before, and I can tell you the difference in what people respond to on TV and on radio is significant. When I talk to people about this radio show these days and the things that I'm doing on the radio show, to a person, every single one of them talks about something that I've said or something that I've done. When I was on TV, a lot of people would talk about the lighting, the camera angles, the suit that I was wearing, whether or not I was sweating, the kind of makeup that I had, all this superficial stuff that I view as just a total distraction from the things that I really want people to pay attention to. So I don't want people talking about whether or not I've got a 5 o'clock shadow or not. I want them to be talking about, the great interview that I did with Andrew Napolitano, or the great commentary that I gave on bringing back Tab Soda. I want people focused on the substance of what I'm saying and doing rather than on the superficial things that television lends itself to. But, you know, never say never, Paulie.
Excellent answer, though. Excellent.
It's true. Thank you. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Daniel in Brooklyn. Hi, Daniel.
Hey, greetings, Frank. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was thinking about New York City and New York State politics today, and I was remembering the other senator, Kirsten Gillibrand.
That's actually what it says on her business card, the other senator.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. I haven't run into her virtually or IRL recently, but, I answered my question actually while I was waiting, because I was like, it seems like a good challenger from the other side could, unseat her. But then I see that there is one now. It looks like a former police detective to challenge Gillibrand. I don't know. That's what I was going to ask, is who's challenging her. I think I got my answer. I guess maybe who should challenge her then 6 years from now.
Yeah, well, I think I had said on the radio, that was a race that I hoped either Andrew Giuliani or Curtis Sliwa would jump into, and I think either of them would have had the potential to win. As of now, there are three Republicans that are trying to run. Looks like at least one of them is going to be thrown off the ballot, maybe two. I think Sapper Cohn, honestly, who's the Republican front runner, a very weak candidate, and I don't see any scenario in Daniel, I'm just going to disconnect you because you're a weird sound come back. I think he's a very weak candidate, but I'm glad that he's running, because you don't want her running unopposed. I think the candidate to watch out for really is Kara Castronova, who's also filed petitions to run there. And right now, Sapra Cohn is trying to have her thrown off the ballot. You know, I think it says a lot about someone. Someone else brought up Obama before. You know how Obama won his first election for state Senate? He had his opponent thrown off the ballot. Now, to me, if that's what you're going to do, that is trying to win on the cheap. That is trying to win on a technicality. That's saying to the voters, we're not confident that you're going to select me because I'm the best candidate. So we have to win through trickery. So I'll be honest, I have very little respect for candidates, and many of them do it, Democrat and Republican and independent, by the way, who try to throw their adversaries off the ballot. I just don't like that. And I think it says a lot about Sapricone that he and the people around him, including a convicted felon, by the way, John Hagerty, that they're trying to throw off these other candidates on the ballot. So I don't know. You know, again, Diane Sayre is also running in that race. I don't know if she'll be able to qualify, but I think she's an interesting candidate. I mean, it's tricky to vote for her. She was on the show. She made a great impression. I thought she raised a lot of good points. And we spoke at a peace rally once, the two of us together. The one hesitancy I would have about voting for her is she is part of this Lyndon LaRouche movement, which I consider a cult. But I go down the list of issues and I am much closer to her. I hate to say it, but I'm much closer to her than I am either Sapricone or Gillibrand. But I don't want to get too much into the weeds. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Brandon is in New Jersey. Hi, Brandon.
Hi, Frank. I wanted to know if William Shatner offered you a free ride on his cruise, but the condition was he had to give up the used Kleenex that you acquired from him. Would you do it?
Yeah, of course I would. I mean, I mean the cruise is a once in a lifetime experience, and if I'm on the cruise, I feel like I can get myself in pretty close proximity where I could get him to sneeze and blow his nose into another facial tissue that I can grab. But it's a great question. I absolutely would make that trade, though, no doubt about it. All right, we'll continue in just a moment. 800-848-9222 with a special edition of Ask Frank Anything. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano. It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
She's all you'd ever want. She's the kind I'd like to flaunt and take to dinner. But she always knows her place. She's got style, she's got grace. She's a winner. She's a lady. Oh, 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 she's a lady. Talking about that little lady. And the lady is mine.
Lady. This is a birthday bumper music selection from, I guess, technically my former cousin-in-law, Lisa Benigno. She was married to my cousin Frankie 4 years. They had two beautiful children. Unfortunately, things didn't work out, and they're divorced. But Lisa is a great person, and whenever I run into her, she's just always got a smile and just terrific. And she is the mother of my cousin Deanna, who I talk about regularly on this program, who made those great baked goods that Dominic Carter is always referring to. And she's going to be a grandmother for the first time. So that's exciting. Happy birthday, Lisa, and excellent use of your wishes thus far. All right. If you're just tuning in, we're doing a little Ask Frank Anything, and I am trying to tackle your questions on any subject. Let me say hello to Alfredo in Newark. Hello, Alfredo.
Yes, Frank, how are you? Frank, if I am not mistaken, you were born Catholic, and why you change your religion?
Well, I don't necessarily. So you're right. I do mostly go to Episcopal services these days, but sometimes I do go to Catholic services as well. And the thing with the Episcopal Church is they're very non-judgy. They consider themselves Catholic and also not Catholic. That's not me saying that. That's what they have said. And they basically. I really became enamored with the Episcopal Church for several reasons. One, I like that they allow priests to marry. I like that they allow women to serve as priests. I like that they don't buy into the miracle of transubstantiation. Honestly, even when I was studying catechism as a child, I never believed that. I have a very tough time believing in transubstantiation, which if you're not Catholic, it basically says that when you take communion, what you're consuming, the wafer, the host wafer, is literally the body and blood of Christ. Not figuratively, not representative, but literally. And I have never believed that transubstantiation takes place. I'm not big into papal infallibility. And there were a lot of other aspects of Catholic dogma that didn't really sit right with me. But then I started going to Episcopal services really because there was a church near where I worked, and I worked on Sundays, and it was convenient for me to go there after work every day. And I was just so blown away by the warmth of the congregation. Now, these days, Episcopal is very similar to Catholic. Pre-Second Vatican Council, when Catholic services were mostly in Latin, there would have been a very big noticeable difference. But if you grew up Catholic, you're very comfortable in the Episcopal Church. I like some of the small things. For instance, in the Episcopal Church, they still say, "and also with you." In the Catholic Church, they say, "and with your spirit." But I really find the warmth and the camaraderie and the collegiality of the parishioners at an Episcopal church to be second to none. And what won me over, honestly, kind of the straw that broke the camel's back, and I talked about this a lot at the time, is after the church service, they have coffee and cake. And I know that sounds silly, but it is so great to have 20, 30 minutes of fellowship with snacks where you get to meet all the other people in the church and you get to know one another. And I find that it's just an experience that's much more conducive to community building than my experiences going to Catholic services over the years. So I hope that answers your question. But, you know, I'm not anti-Catholic. I just think, you know, I prefer going to Episcopal services for the reasons that I stated. All right. One open line if you have a question, 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Neil, what's your question?
Hey, Frank. So the Democrats want Biden, I'm sorry, they want Trump to lose his presidential immunity over the January 6th case. So I'm wondering, Frank, if that happens, don't you think that in the future, or when the new president comes in, they could just as easily go after Biden for disobeying the Supreme Court?
Absolutely. And
absolutely. Student loans?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know about student loans, but no, I mean, presidents disobey Supreme Court orders all the time. So that's not a crime. But yeah, I think, look, I don't believe any president or any public official has absolute immunity. And I don't think the justices are going to find that. I think the question is going to be with respect to the specific crimes charged on January 6th, regarding the January 6th case, rather, how many of those are crimes that are acting within his official capacity? I thought, again, this question always comes up, so you'd think Trump's lawyers have a better answer to it, but you'd think, you know, Trump's lawyer before the Supreme Court got a question about if you assassinate your rival, is that within the scope of presidential duties, and that should that be covered by presidential immunity? Obviously, the answer to that is no. You should not be able to assassinate your rival and not get prosecuted. And yet, Trump's lawyer somehow said yes, that that's within the scope of the job of the presidency. It's not. And it's an idiotic argument, but we'll see where it goes. So I think they're going to issue, it looked like a very good day for Trump yesterday. Looks like they're going to send it back to the lower court, which is going to delay things and probably push things back until after the November election, which is, let's be honest, exactly what Trump wants. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Herman in Long Beach. Hi, Herman.
Hi, how you doing, Frank? Really quick. Frank, do you think that someone will ever found a private treasure or a big treasure in any of the beaches on New York or the Long Island Sound?
Well, I don't know. I don't think you'll see pirate treasure. I could see absolutely a scenario where there are other treasures. And the guy to really ask about this is my Uncle Steve. And I'm going to have to talk to him about this because there's already been a lot of great things that have been found. And New York and other port cities in the Northeast have a long history of ships coming here for hundreds of years. The reason that they find so many, you know, pirate treasures in the Gulf Coast and, you know, around Florida and places like that is because that was the path that a lot of these Spanish ships took to bring gold and other treasures to Mexico. You didn't have these incredible riches in the 15 or 1600s making their way to New York. But I do think there are a lot of riches that can be found from ships that would have been coming this way in the 17th, 18th, and 19th century. Also, I think this area, meaning the Northeast, was a lot less likely to be subjected to things like hurricanes. And I don't think you would have seen ships toppled for that reason. Great question, though, Herman. I think there's plenty of treasure to find. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Ed is in Westchester. Hi, Ed.
Hey, Frank. So, Frank, I have a hypothetical question for you, and it's certainly not going to happen anytime soon. But
okay, ready.
In the case of an untimely demise of Curtis Sliwa, being that you're a great friend of his, what I'd like is if you were eulogizing him, the three most amusing things that you know of that has happened in Curtis Sliwa's life.
Oh, well, so... first of all, you say it may not happen soon. Curtis's life is in danger at any given day. You know, you never know with Curtis. His life's in danger every time he takes a taxi cab. But so I would say, well, look, not all of them. I'm not privy to all of them. I'm privy to the ones mostly that involve me. I would say it would kind of I would have to give some thought as to the theme of the eulogy that I would write. I would say there was one time, for instance, where I was producing Curtis's radio show in the morning and Curtis was deathly ill and refused to go home. And he was getting nauseous and ran out of the radio studio and tried to make it to the bathroom and couldn't make it to the bathroom and had and vomited all over the carpet. And then it was 5:30, 6 o'clock. No, it was 6:30 in the morning. There was no maintenance staff there for another hour and a half. So what were we going to do aside from deal with the vomit smell until 9 a.m.? So I had to then go and clean Curtis's vomit at 6:30 in the morning, which I can tell you if my parents knew that that's what they were spending this amount of money to spend tuition at NYU for, that would not exactly have happened. So that's probably one. Other than that, you know, there was one instance where a couple of times he's, you know, okay, one time, you know, he's going on this rant railing against the guys that that shot him and assaulted him. And, he, you know, we used to have a code that when he couldn't remember something, he would tap his headphones. And that was my cue to get in his headphones and tell him what he couldn't remember. And I'm blown away one day in that he's trying to tell the story about the guy that shot him and was ultimately sentenced to 20 years in part for that shooting. And he couldn't remember the name of the guy that shot him. I can promise you, Ed, I haven't been assaulted as many times as Curtis, but if I was shot and almost died, I can guarantee you I would remember the name of the guy that shot me. But and that probably leads me to the other thing that I would mention is several times on the air, Curtis seemed to have almost a mental block about one of his children's names. He kept calling him the wrong name. So probably not remembering the name of the guy that shot him, calling his son the wrong name, and having me clean up his vomit because he insisted on coming to work sick.
That's great. Thank you, Frank.
Thank you, Ed. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Igor is in New Jersey. Hi, Igor.
Hey, greetings, Frank.
Hi.
Hey, this past week, I think when you were talking about Jerry Seinfeld and his comments about film, you mentioned Joe Franklin's name. And I was wondering if you could tell us how exactly you came to meet him the first time. What was your first meeting like? And maybe you could tell us a few things about his sort of legendary office, which seemingly had stuff piled to the ceiling.
Okay, well, so I'm not going to, I don't want to redo the 4 hours of this that I did when Joe died. And if I can ever get my hard drive repaired, I will send you those 4 hours. But I'll give you the best Cliff Notes version I can to answer your question. I think I was about 15 when I first met Joe, and Joe was listed in the phone book. So he was listed in the phone book. So I called for information for Joe Franklin Radio and TV. TV. They gave me his number and I called him up and I start. And at the time I was doing a public access cable television show and I was using his desk that he had donated. And I started talking about that. And I was trying to get him on the show. And, you know, I didn't know that this was Joe's MO at the time, but he sounded really excited to talk to me for about 20, 30, 40 seconds. And then he said, Frank, do me a favor. It's absolutely critical that you call me tomorrow, 2:30 p.m. I got a lot going on here. Call me 2:30 p.m. tomorrow afternoon. Promise me, Frank. Promise me. Slams the phone down. I call back tomorrow at 2:30 p.m. And we speak for about 10 seconds. Frank, I got six people in my office right now. And there's no way I can talk to you right now. Promise me that you'll call Thursday morning, 10:30 a.m. Thursday morning at 10:30 a.m. I call Thursday morning at 10:30 a.m. And it's the same thing. Frank, I got a lot going on here. I'll do whatever you want. Call me Monday at 4:15 precisely, and I'll make you very happy. And then I learned that he does this all day long with everybody. So what I did is the next day that I was off from school, I just went to his office, went right up there, and I think there might have been a doorman, but he didn't stop anybody. I said I was going to see Joe Franklin. He waved me right up. He was clearly used to anybody that wanted to see Joe Franklin going right up there, and we hit it off almost instantaneously. We got along. I was telling him about the show that I was doing. He seemed to like me very much, seemed to appreciate that I was really interested in what he was doing, and we kind of just stayed in touch for about 4, 5, or 6 months. And, you know, nothing really super close. But then when we were talking, he mentioned that he was sick. He had a very bad cold. And my mother worked right by him. And I had asked her if she would go pay him a visit and bring him some soup or something. So my mother goes and brings him some soup at my request after she's done with her workday. And Joe falls in love with my mother, which is not unusual because my mother has a very charismatic, bubbly personality and she's easy to fall in love with. So Joe immediately becomes my mom's biggest fan, spends hours with her. And then by extension, he always would have time for me. So what I would do is I would just spend pretty much every free day that I had as a young person and really in to some extent, even into my 20s, going to his office every single day. And I would just sit there and I would ask him questions. And he had these two phones that were ringing constantly. They would ring all day long from no answering machine, nothing like that. They would ring all day long from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m., two phones, and they'd be ringing off the hook. So I would sit there all day long, along with one of the other people in his office who may or may not have been homeless, and I would answer the phones all day long, and Joe would tell everybody that called, almost without exception, the same thing that I went through. And as far as his office goes, his office was huge. One of the bigger offices I've ever seen in Manhattan, but you could never fit more than four people in there at a time because it was so filled with books, with magazines, with newspapers, with VHS tapes, with television monitors, with memorabilia, with reel to reel that it was really tough. And around 2004 or 2005, he moved to another floor in that same building. And that office was a little bit easier to walk around in. I think it was a little more spacious, but he also had less time to expand to all four corners. But it was really a sight to behold. That was my favorite place on earth. And whenever I had friends that that were in town, I would go and bring them to Joe's office. And without exception, they all got such a kick out of meeting him, and he would go out of his way to entertain them, especially if they were in the entertainment business and he liked that. And then once I started, you know, being kind of successful on the radio, first in New York, he would call me after just about every single show, and he would have all sorts of questions following up about the show, you know, about the show that I had just done for 4.5 hours. And he would say, Frank, at about 2:30 this morning, it was a news report, and the last words were, and they'll never be the same. What was that news report? And so then I'd have to go back and listen to this news report, which is exactly what I want to do after doing 4 hours of radio, and tell him what it was. I call him back, tell him what it was. And you interviewed this fella, Frank. That was your best show yet. Best show yet. Around 3:15, you interviewed this fella. You said he wrote this book. What was that book? What was that book that he wrote? And I said, oh, this was the title of the book. And Frank, let me ask you a question. Any way possible that you can get me that book? I said, Joe, you're not going to have time to read this book. When are you going to read it? He says, no, I'm going to read it. I want to read what you read. And I would have to send someone to his office, or I would bring it myself, to drop off this this book. And without exception, every single person that I sent to his office described an incredible experience going there and having that interaction with him. And he really never disappointed. Whatever. Don't get me started. I could do another 5 hours right now, but I'm gonna stop. I'm gonna put a pin in it because I could go on forever. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. Steve is in the Boogie Down Bronx. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Frank. I was wondering if you would consider bringing on the New York Post columnist Douglas Murray for a talk on woke Islamization of America and cultural Marxism. And he speaks in a very positive concern.
Yeah, you know, I've read a number of his columns, and I find several of them interesting. And I definitely would be up for having him on. In fact, I'm going to write myself a note right now to do just that. Thank you, Douglas. Thank you for the suggestion, Steve. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. We're going to continue with your questions straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight. It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
We were good, we were cold. Kind of dream that can't be sold. We were right till we weren't. Built a home and watched it burn. I didn't wanna leave you. I didn't wanna lie. Started to cry, but then remembered I can buy myself flowers. Write my name in the sand. Talk to myself for hours. See things you don't understand.
Love this song. It's Miley Cyrus, Flowers. Once in a while, when I'm driving home and I need to stay awake for the last 5 minutes of my drive, and the podcast that I'm listening to has ended, and I don't want to start a new one, and a live radio show that I want to hear hasn't started yet, I'll put on this song in my rotation as one of the songs to play. This is another birthday bumper music selection from my cousin Lisa. By the way, I was negligent yesterday. I want to apologize to my cousin Liz. Liz Rogers, formerly Liz Morano, who had her birthday yesterday, and I did not mention it on air, even though she is a devoted listener of this show and a terrific first cousin once removed. So happy birthday, Liz, and I am sorry about that. All right, 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Ray is in the Boogie Down Bronx. Hello, Ray.
Yes, Frank, I have a six-part question.
Six parts? Oh, my goodness.
No, just a joke. That's all fun. Right, if you could wave a magic wand, what would your wish list be for the three interviews you could get on the radio that you haven't had on your show?
Ooh,
the
three.
Top three people.
Oh, that, Mel Brooks is right up there. Okay, definitely Mel Brooks. Steve Martin, also right up there. And then number three, see, I'm tempted to say Ric Flair if I could get him for, you know, especially if I could get him for an hour. Definitely Mel Brooks and Steve Martin. You know who I'm going to say? I don't want three in the same genre. Yeah, I'll say Ric Flair. I'm going to make those my three. Ric Flair, Mel Brooks, and Steve Martin.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ray. 800-848-9222. Dave is in Las Vegas, Nevada. Hello, Dave.
Hello. Other than Albany, what is your favorite state capital?
Ooh, other than Albany. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to try and think of what other state capitals that I've been to. I've been to Atlanta, which is their state capital, but I didn't spend any time at the state capital. I've been to Trenton, and I can tell you the answer is absolutely not Trenton. And then let's see, where else have I been in terms of state capitals? I've been to California, but I've not been to Sacramento. I've been to Nevada, but I've not been to Carson City. I've been to, all right, you know, I'm going to go with Atlanta. I've only been to Atlanta once, but I had a great experience there, and I'm eager to go back. It's a great town, a great place, and I'm going to say Atlanta. 800-848-9222, two open lines if you have a question. Carl is in St. Louis. Hello, Carl.
Yeah, Frank, I've not heard this discussed anywhere before, but I'm trying to find out, is Trump committing election fraud or election, I don't know, the company or the organization that oversees election by raising money for his reelection campaign, but using it to pay lawyer fees for all of these criminal cases?
It's actually a great question because this has been looked at many times before when there have been politicians that have had legal issues. And the answer is no. So the courts have ruled repeatedly that, yes, you can use campaign funds just as you could use funds that you raised from a legal defense fund. You can use campaign funds to pay for legal issues. And almost every politician that has legal issues does some version of this. Andrew Cuomo is doing that same thing now with some of the $15 million that he raised. I think in Trump's case, it's almost more honest because every time he sends out a fundraising solicitation, he basically says he needs this money to fight what the DC swamp is doing to me, or he needs this money to fight these unjust charges against me. So he's really telling his donors that this is where the money is going. And I don't think that anybody that's donating to Trump now, I don't think any of them take issue with him using it to fund his legal defense. And but it's a good question. It's one worth raising because people have asked that question before. Now, someone like Andrew Cuomo, who didn't have all these legal issues at the time that he raised that $15 or $16 million, I wonder how the people that gave him that money are feeling about that. But it's a great question. But no, you can absolutely do that. There's a lot of latitude in terms of what you can do with your legal defense funds. 800-848-9222. One open line if you have a question. Let me say hello to Todd in Minnesota, listening on WCCO. Hello, Todd.
Hey, buddy. Hey, you know what? I'm just curious. Do you really, truly think you have faith in the future of the United States of America, you know, for the children? You know, I'm a little bit older than yourself, but at the same time, I've watched my children grow, and I'm just curious, you know, the judicial system and all the different things that are going on. And with that, I'd just like to hear your response.
Well, so just so I'm clear on the question, do I have faith in the future of the United States of America?
Yeah, and kind of where we're going. You know, we hear a lot of different things every evening. I listen to you when I get off work, and, you know, I'm listening to a lot of different good, interesting topics every single night of the week. And, you know, verge of World War III really struck me this week.
Yeah,
you know,
well, it's a great question, Todd. You know, I certainly have hope in the future of the United States, but I look at a lot of the trend lines of where we're going as a country. And I'm not even just talking about, you know, the trends towards the potential for war and things like that, although that's certainly important. But the trends towards people feeling alienated from their communities and, you know, some numbers that came out yesterday. I don't know if you saw it, but the American fertility rate has now fallen to a new low. So at this point, the only way that the American population is sustaining itself is through immigration. So your question is such a good one. Do I have faith in the future of the United States?
Exactly. And I see it. We see it, and it's changing. And, you know, and I'm looking at my children, the cost of homes, the future for education, and,
You know, it's so, yes.
Todd, I'm going to say yes for two reasons. One, okay. Because if I say no and I'm ready to throw in the towel now, then what's the point of everything I'm doing, right? What's the point of everything that I'm doing on the radio, in politics, in terms of being a parent, in terms of trying to be a good citizen? Why am I spending so much energy and effort trying to make the future a better place if I think it's hopeless? So I have to believe that that America has a vibrant future, because otherwise everything that I'm doing, with the exception of sleeping and eating, which again, there's a lot to be said for that, is totally futile. So that's the answer, the first part of your question. The second part is, as I've studied American history and current day trends, I have become more convinced of the generational theory of Strauss and Howe. And basically what they say is that, and my friend Rich Hoffman turned me on to this, but I've done a lot of reading into it, and this is where you hear about the fourth turning and things like that. They basically say that all of American history repeats every 80 years, and that there's a crisis, there's a turning point, there's a generation that rescues us from the crisis, and then the same thing basically happens again. And I think if you go back in history, to even before there was a country on this continent, Strauss and Howe looked pretty good. So I think, you know, they basically say there are four generations. There's a prophet or idealist generation, a nomad or reactive generation, a hero or civic generation, and then an artist or adaptive generation. And I think that holds true. So I'm hoping that what we're experiencing now, Todd, is basically just part of that. But who knows? We'll see. As Sugar Ray Richardson once said, the basketball player, the ship be sinking. If that's the case, God help us. 800-848-9222. Mr. C is in Brooklyn. Hello, Mr. C.
Good morning. Michael Richards, Kramer from Seinfeld. Do we know anything about what's going on with him lately?
You're talking about the real Kramer, Kenny Kramer, or the actor that played Kramer?
The actor, Michael Richards.
I mean, I saw him in that season of Curb Your Enthusiasm he did a couple of years ago, and I thought he was funny as ever. But since then, I haven't really heard much from him at all.
Well, could I check that out, the Curb Your Enthusiasm?
So you're a Seinfeld fan, but not a Curb fan, I take it?
Right.
Okay, so if that's the case, the only season of Curb Your Enthusiasm that you need to watch is season seven. Just watch that season and only that season. Basically, that would have been, if Seinfeld had a reunion, that's what you're watching. Curb season seven is the Seinfeld reunion.
Thanks so much.
Watch
Frank.
That. You Thank will. You. You're Thank welcome. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. Bob is in Manorville. Hi, Bob.
How you doing? Hey, Frank. I don't know if you've ever noticed. I know you're a big movie goer. Why so many movies these days, they use British actors and actresses to play American parts, when there's so many American actors and actresses available? Like, why do they always seem to give the role to a British actor or actress? And you very rarely see it the other way. You very rarely see an American playing a British person in a movie. And has an American ever audition to play one of the James Bonds over the years?
Well, they considered, I don't know if he auditioned, but they considered Cary Grant for the role of James Bond. First of all, you're right. I have noticed that they've had a lot of British actors play American characters. People like Christian Bale, for instance. Two shows that I like, Billions and Homeland, would not have been the same without Damian Lewis. But then you hear what these guys sound like in real life, and it sounds very different. There are a couple of examples, mostly with women. that I could think of where there's been American actors playing British characters. And the one comes to mind because my wife showed me this film, Bridget Jones's Diary. You have Renee Zellweger, who plays a British character. Gwyneth Paltrow has played a British character a couple of times, once in Shakespeare in Love. And I'm trying to think of any men that have done that. I mean, look, I guess you got to count Sherlock Holmes as a British character, and Robert Downey Jr. Played him. I don't know why that happens. I have noticed that it's much more common, as you point out, going British to American rather than American to British. All right. Those of you that are on hold, I'll try and get to you. You can be grandfathered in, but we are just about out of time for this edition of Ask Frank Anything. Matt Blaze and Tony, do you have a consensus on who the best question is?
Ed from Westchester wanted to know the three most amazing things about Curtis.
There you go. Ed from Westchester. Call back at 800-848-9222 and we will give you a prize. For everybody else, if we didn't get to your question today, I apologize. We will in the future. In the meantime, in the immortal words of the late, great Bob Barker, help control the pet population. Get your dog or cat spayed or neutered.